In my last video, I discussed how humanity's first hidden knowledge was that of astronomy, and I feel like I made a pretty good case for it, and a lot of you seem to have agreed with me. I haven't had this many positive comments so quickly on a video ever, and I really appreciate that. And despite the lower number of views than normal, which is typical for these kinds of videos, don't forget to share with your friends, I'm really proud of this one because it really does. I love this topic, and I feel like I communicated it well enough that a lot of you really enjoyed it. And I want to talk a little more about the Aurignacian people, because this is a very interesting time in human history, and thanks to the work of Alexander Marshak and Chantal Jaggies-Wolkiewicz, I'm great at pronunciations, we have solid evidence that they were tracking the moon and recording it a very long time ago.
Now, the bone from the Abri Blanchard is a prime example. On one piece of bone, in an area about the size of a wristwatch, a lunar calendar, what he was doing was notating the passage of time, notating the phases of the moon as the moon waxed and waned.
He discovered the meaning of the marks, but sadly for him and happily for me, because I was delighted to discover something he hadn't. He didn't realize that the serpentine form is the result of observations being made from the same spot throughout the entire observation period.
Sitting at the foot of the cliff, like the Paleolithic sculptor, she recorded the measurements necessary for her calculations. The researcher then drew a chart that showed, day by day, the height of the moon in the sky and the point on the horizon where it set. One by one, the coordinates she obtained with her astronomical calculations matched the tiny cupules, or cup marks, carved on the bone. True, it was not a perfect match, and some lunar phases were missing. But the general outline of the two figures is strikingly similar.
Now, hands down, this is one of the most interesting artifacts that I've ever looked into. I mean, the Aurignacian culture was said to have existed from like 43,000 to 20,000 years ago. And we have at least one solid example of them doing astronomy. Which makes me wonder a few things. Number one, can we find other artifacts that show them doing astronomy as well? Or is this a one-off? And number two, in that same area, what other iconography can we find that might clue us in as to why they were tracking the moon so close? Well, let's take a look at the old astronomy from a very long time ago. Hi, my name is Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. To start with, let's discuss the Aurignacian culture. I mean, it's not really a culture per se, it's kind of like the Clovis culture. It's a catch-all term that basically applies to a toolkit. In the case of the Aurignacian people, this toolkit consisted of projectile points, most of them being made of bone or antler, with a notched bottom. Their stone blades were made from prepared cores of stone instead of being made from flakes. They made lots of art, and some of what appears to be symbolic carvings, almost a language or form of notation, like the moon chart, which we will discuss in greater depth shortly. Now, it is important to note that the Aurignacian quote-unquote culture was spread over a very wide geographic area for a very long time, so they had a lot of different gods, languages, ideas, morality. But one thing that they shared was their toolkit, and their artwork was a little bit on the unique side as well. Most notable were their notched projectile points, and those were used to save the shaft of a spear or an arrow. The point itself may break off, but the stick should hopefully not break. I mean, it is a little bit harder in the plains to find a good chunk of wood than it is to find a good chunk of stone, so this does make sense. Their stone tools coming from prepared cores means that they prepared a piece of rock, and then they would flake pieces off of it. But the rock was prepared in a way as to make it manageable, and so the pieces that came off of it were already kind of sort of what they wanted. They also made some really impressive artwork, like the Chavaux Caves, right? Chavaux Pont, the Arc, whatever. It's not far from the sites we're going to be focusing on. And the reach of these people, like I said, was vast, from Spain to Italy to France to Germany to Russia even, and this means that they wouldn't all be doing the same thing. Some areas are going to show more painting, some are going to show more carvings, some are going to show more down-to-earth utilitarian stuff, and less of the fun stuff. many of these sites show no evidence at all for astronomy. And that's not to say that the people there didn't stargaze. It's a pretty safe assumption people 40, 30, 20,000 years ago looked at the stars quite a bit. But this doesn't prove that they were tracking them, that they were mapping them, that they were using them for anything other than stories and to look at them and to be in awe. But we can look at other things in their culture to get an idea of what they were into. I mean, we can see that they ate a lot of meat. We can see that they were advanced tool makers to a degree compared to their contemporaries. And we can also see that when it came to their artwork, they were really focused on roosters and kitties. Now, bear with me. I know this seems like it has nothing to do with astronomy, but I assure you that it may. Anyway, let's look at their obsession a little bit, even though it's weird. Now, the first person to find the art here was Louis Didon, who was an amateur archaeologist and the main dude in charge of excavating Aubry Blanchard, which was one of the earliest Ornithian sites discovered. Now, Didon didn't know what this was supposed to be, but he was quickly informed by Henry Briel, a Catholic priest and archaeologist, that these were lady parts depicted there. How a Catholic priest was so familiar with lady parts that he was the first one to identify that sculpture as such is something for him, St. Peter, and maybe a few nuns to discuss in the afterlife. But what is important to note is that this find opened the floodgates, and the flow was immense. The flow of other art, I mean, found all over the region that is now France and a little bit in Germany. This art is clearly focused on one part of the female anatomy, in a manner that's very similar to the Venus statues that we see in the record. Exaggerated in certain ways. In fact, at least two of the Venus figurines are from Ornithian people. One was found in what is today Austria, and one in Germany. Even when they painted that amazing art in the Chavez Point d'Arc cave, they made sure to slap a bush on the wall with some thick hips attached to a lion or a bear or two lions. And that really has me wondering what they meant with this symbol. Is it early furry art? Well, maybe. But maybe it actually has some symbolic meaning. Fertility seems like a good place to start. Now, we see several roosters, you could say, in the Ornithian sites too, but nowhere nearly as many as we do kitties. They seem to be downright obsessed with this part of the female anatomy, which makes me wonder if they were maybe some of those New Age types that like to, like, worship the goddess mother and carve stones and hats and all kinds of stuff to resemble that part, or maybe they're just womanizers. Either way, in this day and age, that obsession would get somebody labeled as some sort of creepy individual, but back then, it just standard wall art. And while some of the peckers are obviously useful, as you can see, oh boy, okay, seriously, now, the difference is strong. I mean, the difference between something that's just a piece of art on the wall that looks like something, and then something that, well, you know, you could actually, it's almost life-size. It's not exactly life-size. I mean, it's a little bigger than life-size. Some of us probably feel a little embarrassed when we look at that and think life-size, but you get what I'm saying. One of these is a piece of art, and one of them is potentially, could be attached to a piece of sinew and go ba-dung, dung, 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 and wiggle around a little bit. So there might be a reason that we see a lot more vulva art than we do phalluses in the record. Well, there you go. I use my big boy words now. Hopefully YouTube doesn't think that I'm over here making Dr. Ruth vids and demonetize the crap out of me. Now, it does stand to reason that the birth canal that gives life is more mysterious than Frankenbeans. And I don't mean the bean that a lot of you can't find. I mean, my point here is that, like, the tunnel that brings life into the world is probably more fascinating to ancient prehistoric people than
Sorry about that.
So the disparity does actually make sense if you think about it. One is a lot more venerated than the other, and one of them also needs to be managed better in order to, like, bring children into the world at the proper time, or to, you know, not bring children into the world when you don't want to.
Oh, there you go, Grandpa.
Oh, Rob. Oh, she's beautiful.
Well, I hope you finished, because we're finally moving on to the astronomy. This is a bone from the Aubrey Lartet shelter. That shelter is literally feet from the Aubrey Blanchard shelter that the moon boat I showed you earlier came from. Now, both of those artifacts are over 30,000 years old. When Alexander Marshak did his work with that Aubrey Blanchard bone, he also fixated on this one as well. You see, he was hired by NASA to do a history of astronomy back in like 72, and in his research, he really kicked a lot of rocks nobody had kicked before, or bones as the case may be, and a lot of the things that he found ended up being really interesting, and some of them were discarded out of hand, some of them were almost completely accepted out of hand by most people, and a lot of them were just kind of iffy. To quote from a Penn State publication, it's an archaeological thing called Expedition Magazine, two artifacts which Marshak has analyzed in detail are bone plaques from the site of L'Aubrey Lartet and L'Aubrey Blanchard, both excavated in the last century. These artifacts are small and bear a series of engraved pits and lines on their surfaces. On the piece from L'Aubrey Lartet, face 1 has 37 lines and 87 pits, while face 2 has 35 lines and 54 pits. In addition, there is a series of notches along the edge of the artifact. Some areas of this notched edge have been broken or eroded, but if these are reconstructed, the number of engraved notches comes to 121. Marshak notes that if the total number of edge notches and engraved lines and pits on each side are divided by the length of the lunar month, the result is 11 months. From this he derives a sequence for reading the notation which gives this number of lunar cycles. He assumes that the lines were engraved first and the pits afterwards because the lines are more widely and freely spaced than the pits. Similarly, an order is proposed for the pits moving right to left based on their relative size and spacing. Each side is read in turn, with the notches continuing in notation at the end of the sequence. If the marks are laid out linearly, they can be mapped against the lunar model. With a certain amount of manipulation, a reasonable fit can be made to an 11-month cycle. Marshak also points out that if the notation begins and ends with a new moon, the sequence spans a lunar year in terms of lunar appearance and disappearance. Now, to be honest, on its own, this is a stretch, and not just a little one. But it's not on its own. This wasn't found in a vacuum. It was found right next to Aubrey Blanchard, which is the site that had that moon bone, which is quite a bit more robust. So it is worth taking into consideration. But as a quick aside, I want to point out a very interesting point that journalist Alexander Marshak is treated quite a bit differently by academics than scientist Dr. Martin Sweatman when they're discussing archaeoastronomy. Even though Dr. Martin Sweatman's work is much more detailed and is a lot more robust, you could say. As a matter of fact, he actually started from the proper position. His whole idea is based on that scorpion being Scorpio. And to quote a paper called Evidence and Analogy in Archaeoastronomy by venerable archaeoastronomer Giulio Magli, it is in this context that analogy plays a role in archaeoastronomy. A military metaphor is especially fitting here. Starting from the available evidence, the research strategy is to identify a bridgehead that links some observed feature of the civilization under study with those of a more familiar culture. Such link may be provided by similarities in the respective material artifacts or buildings, by evidence of common religious forms and cultural practices, or by considerations of historical and geographical contiguity. Once an adequate bridgehead is available, the remaining work consists in a transfer of the system of meanings of the familiar culture into the description of the target civilization, revising and filling those aspects of the source culture that are either inapplicable or missing. In this way, an analogy with a more familiar civilization can be a source of new insights and hypotheses about a people whose intentions and worldview would otherwise entirely escape us. Now, Dr. Sweatman has been called all manner of names and a charlatan. His work's been said to be just garbage and ridiculous. So you would assume that Alexander Marshak has suffered similar slings and arrows. And he has, to a tiny degree. But he's also been made a research assistant at the Peabody Museum of Archaeology and Ethnology, which is at Harvard. You might have heard of that place before. Instead of being called the charlatan and all these mean names, they just let him in their hallowed halls. His work is a lot more respected than Dr. Sweatman's, even though Dr. Sweatman's is more detailed, more robust, and fits the rules of archaeoastronomy better. But Dr. Martin Sweatman hangs out with Graham Hancock. And Alexander Marshak didn't hang out with anybody like that, so there you go. Now we all know the difference in why these guys are being treated. Alright, back to the less infuriating part of the video. Now the excavations at the Aubrey Lanchette and Aubrey Blanchard shelters happened about 120 years ago, and about half of the artifacts are said to be missing, so presumably half of the evidence from that site that would help us see why they were tracking the moon so intently is lost. And another nearby shelter in the same archaeological complex, known as Aubrey Lascelles, this carving was part of the limestone of a shelter before it was quote-unquote excavated. Well, they said that it fell off the wall back in 1911, but at any rate, it's known as the Venus of Lascelles, and that girl's about as thick as it gets. And setting her apart from other Venuses of the time, she holds a horn that has 13 marks on it, and many have posited that the horn represents the crescent moon, the notches represent the menstrual cycles per year, or days between menstruation and ovulation, or perhaps just the number of lunations in the year. Lunation is a fancy term for the full cycle of the moon, for those of you who don't know, like from new moon back to new moon again. But anyway, this is the most overt reproductive symbolism we've seen with a moon symbol yet. The horn looks like a moon, and the number of marks on it correspond to the reproductive cycles, and it's on the depiction of a woman with exaggerated reproductive features. And this seems to tie the reproductive symbolism that we see literally all over this area together with the moon, which does make sense. I mean, we do know that, you know, a menstrual cycle and a one lunar cycle is pretty much the same period of time, and many, many more primitive, hunter-gatherer societies, I don't want to get in trouble. Many of those kinds of cultures, many people still believe that the moon influences pregnancy. And while science has weighed in on this and found that that's not the case, even in primitive societies where they're away from electricity and they're way out in the sticks, phase of the moon has nothing to do with whether or not somebody gets pregnant. It could well be the other way around. It could have been that the ancients were using the moon in order to time their pregnancies, in order to manage them, which would make a lot of sense. Just a few hundred miles away in Germany, we see possible evidence for this sort of behavior, but with the constellation Orion. This is known as the Odorant. It's a small piece of ivory, an inch and a half tall, and half an inch wide, and less than a quarter inch thick. On one side is a carving of a man, and on the other is a number of dots and dashes, many of the dashes being on the edge as well. And one researcher, Dr. Michael Rappengluck, a University of Munich man with a specialty in the history of earth sciences and astronomy, looked at that tiny ivory carving, and after spending some time evaluating it, determined that it was a representation of Orion, that the number of marks on it correlated to Orion's highest point and lowest point on the horizon, and that this could have been used to manage pregnancy. I'll let Michael explain it. A predictor to estimate the date of delivery, still used today by many doctors, is the so-called Nagele rule. Starting with the first day of the last menstrual period, 3 calendar months, about 92 days, are subtracted and 1 year, 7 days, added. It is based on the concept that human gestation is 10 menstrual cycles of 28 days, 9 sidereal months plus 7 days, and works with 95% probability, confidence interval plus or minus 3 weeks. The quantity of 3 calendar months is quite close to the above-mentioned 1 of 86-some days, and also to the notches on the plate, 87 divided by 1, which is a time between the heliacal setting and rising of Orion at the site of the Gopurkup cave in the Orognatian epoch. Thus, the Paleolithic timekeepers may have fixed the time of conception with the heliacal setting and predicted the birth after a rule similar to that of Nagales. Perhaps at that time in the year, a ritual was performed in which cosmic fertility was worshipped and sexual intercourse was preferred. Such traditions are well known from different ancient peoples all over the world. And so there you have it. If this is Orion, then the marks on that piece of ivory presumably are associated with Orion and may well have been used to help manage conception. And, you know, this was like 30,000 years ago, a really, really long time ago, so the stars may have moved a little bit since then, not a lot, but a little. And Michael claims to have, done that in the software back in 20 years ago and aligned it on a picture here. And, the pic is, Well, I took the time to steal the outline, and with a little effort, I think I got it lined up the same, but without that potato quality that we had a minute ago. And here you can see, I mean, it looks pretty good. It's not perfect for sure, but the actual constellation has what we would call a sword scabbard, which there is no freaking way the Ordnation saw as anything but a schlong, and that matches up to the Oderont. In addition, the legs are similarly offset, and the waist is thinner than one would expect, mimicking the constellation, possibly. There's a stronger case for this Oderont being an actual depiction of Orion than there is for that bone from Aubrey Lortet to actually depict the moon, in my opinion. But again, these aren't found in a vacuum. When you look at the Aubrey Blanchard bone and you see that clear moon chart, I mean, not only does it depict numerous phases of the moon, but it shows the pattern that the moon winds around in as well. And you can say, yes, there are some phases and some days missing there, but I mean, you know, it could be that some of those phases were sacred and they weren't allowed to talk about them. It could be that some of those phases or days were sacred and they weren't allowed to go up and look at them. Or it could be that it was cloudy that day. There's a lot of things that could have stopped somebody from recording certain things, right? What we do know is the correlation is so heavy with this, you'd almost have to be like incredulous to the point of silliness to reject that this is probably a depiction of the moon, which makes the other artifacts more compelling. And once again, it took cooperation from mainstream academia to facilitate these discoveries, as both Alexander Marshak and Chantal Jaguez-Wolkiewicz were allowed access to things they normally would not be. Marshak being made that honorary research assistant, like I said earlier, and Chantal being allowed to do extensive work at archaeological sites, including being granted full access to the Lesseaux Caves by the curator of the site at the time. All the people who did work that I mentioned here today have faced a lot of skepticism and criticism, but the tone was entirely different than faced by Dr. Martin Sweatman or by Robert Bovall. And, you know, some people, it's one thing to be skeptical, I get it, but some people are just assholes.
But dicks also fuck assholes, Chuck.
And this brings us back to the sexy stuff. I mean, it could well be that, like, the sex cult thing was a huge part of the Ordnation people in this little area, France and Germany, which would explain a lot about their modern culture over there, but we won't get into that too much. The whole big thing here is that what we have is a very good window into the possibility of some very early astronomy, and while some of these things we'll probably never know for sure, because, again, half the artifacts are missing, we do have some pretty good windows in. And just in 2012, more artifacts were discovered in that area, so maybe they'll find some more stuff. Maybe, you know, some things will get donated to a museum when some rich person that's had it in their family for 20 generations, or 5 generations, I should say, passes. But odds are, we probably are going to not be able to get much more detail out of this stuff than we have now. Some of the other artifacts do have dots and stuff on them, so there's a good possibility there is more charts and other notations that are there, but looking at through the astronomical lens is really only one way of looking at an artifact, and it's certainly not the only way that is correct. It's just another lens that should be brought to bear when we're not sure. In my opinion, it's probably one of the most robust lenses. We know that people had sex. We know that they ate. We know that they hunted. And we know they looked at the sky. So these are kind of ubiquitous things that we should obviously use any time that we can to evaluate a thing. But again, in this case, we can kind of look at it and say there's a really good chance that they had a very practical reason for counting the moon so closely. And that whole reason was just to make sure they didn't have too many babies, or that the babies they did have survived the hard part of the year. I really appreciate you watching. Thank you so much. I'm going to be down in Sedona, Arizona. Here is what May 1 through 3, May 1st through 3rd, for those of you who speak English. And it's going to be a lot of fun. There's a link down below to get your pre-ordered tickets and all that jazz. There's also links to support the channel here. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time.